Cause I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows. I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows.
And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, along with the currently Florida landlocked, but soon to be multiple cities bound, Adam Markowitz. How are you, Adam?
Oh, I'm ready to fly.
It's going to be my first time in California, heading out to Stockton for the game. And
my fourth time in California this year.
Already this year.
Well, are we including connections?
Whatever.
Well, I've been at San Francisco's airport twice. I've been at San Diego's airport once. I flew out to San Jose and actually stayed there.
Yeah.
So it's going to be at least my second time out there.
Should be good. Everything seems to be falling into place now, and there's a little bit more we'll talk about when it comes to how this whole Spokane thing. I did it already. Did it first. See how many times I do that tonight. The Stockton thing came about. But obviously, in order to get to said place, we need to talk about said games. And something that you put, Adam, talking about probably the best 24 hours in Arena Football League history, I am going to completely agree with you. I don't think, as Arena Football fans, we couldn't have asked for two games that were any better.
The only 24 hours, I don't even know if it was in 24 hours, come to think of it, but the only, you know, span of conference championship games that was better was in 2005. The Confetti Bowl.
Oh, yeah, Confetti
between
Bowl.
Chicago and Colorado. And I believe it was the day before when Orlando played against Georgia and the Predators. I was at this game. This was actually the last game I went to as a fan. The Predators scored a touchdown with, I believe it was zeros on the clock, and they went for two, and they ended up, and they had like three or four cracks at it and ended up not getting it.
Yeah.
It was a phenomenal game.
Was it penalty upon penalty upon penalty?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, the Predators scored with no time left on the clock, and they lost 60-58 as a result. So those two games, the Confetti Bowl and that game, as conference title games, I'll say were better than this, but it doesn't get significantly better than this. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it all started off with the game that was somewhat delayed again. Hey, ESPN News, should that be their mantra now? Should we give them a new slogan or something like that?
I'm not going to go there.
No. One of the best in Arena Football League history, these two teams, one of the best rivalries. It's just a game that it didn't seem like anybody wanted to play defense. I guess that's the easiest way to say.
Except for the third quarter.
That's right. I mean, it's, yeah. What else can we say? I mean, we're going to talk about more about this, obviously, on what everybody's talking about, and on everybody's minds. And it seems like both these games this week had a little bit of controversy. How they're pronouncing the damn word now? Anyways,
Canada.
Yeah. It was just a. It was a, you know, two gunslingers going at it. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's Nick Davila looked amazing. No picks. Eric Meyer looked amazing. One pick. I mean, he ate over, you know, out through, what is it, 260 for Davila, 351 for Meyer. Just back and forth and back and forth. I mean,
it really wasn't that simple. I know it seems that simple, but it wasn't that simple.
Right.
There were 5 fourth downs in this game, and only two of them were converted. There were 12 third downs in this game. What there wasn't any of is pressure on the quarterback.
So
the offensive line play was very, very good on both sides. Arizona did get 2 sacks. One of them was absolutely a coverage sack. The other one's just not coming to my mind right now as it was. But, you know, the theme that kind of came about in this game, and we can talk about this, I mean, you know, Right. Everyone who saw the play with 8 seconds left, or how many ever seconds really were left, but 8 seconds left officially in the game, Eric Meyer gets an out pass towards the sidelines to Reggie Gray.
Yep.
Gray, you know, the way it was ruled, catches the ball, turns, stretches out, and the line judge, I guess it's the line judge, standing literally on top of the play, determined that the ball crossed the end zone.
Right.
Now, upon further review, it certainly looks like that ball came out before it ever hit that gold or brown, whatever color line it is.
Gold, yeah, the gold line, yeah.
That goes up onto the dasher boards, or onto the sideboards, rather.
And I didn't know that it had been a fumble, actually, until I saw the opposite angle. I mean, I saw because the way that the angle was on television, you really couldn't tell that it was a fumble until they actually started looking at it and whatnot. So,
well, it was a terrible live camera angle. But the replay angles, I mean, here's my problem with the replay. I have a couple problems with this. I'll start with how it was handled by the refs. I actually have no problem with the way this was handled by the refs. There was not conclusive video evidence
right.
that ball came out before the end zone, in my estimation. Now, I have a problem with the fact that the clock was never reviewed because there were clearly 11 or 12 seconds on the clock
mm-hmm.
when the ruling for a touchdown happened.
Right.
The clock operator was god-awful all game long in this game, and I hope they get that worked out for the Arena Bowl.
And it was brought down to 8 seconds, right?
Correct. It was brought down to 8 seconds. Now, I still question whether this is a legal catch. I question whether Reggie Gray ever truly has possession of the football long enough to be garnered a catch. I also have a question as to whether Reggie Gray's, I believe it was right, kind of foot and ankle area
right.
was up against the wall before that ball came out.
The dasher board. Yeah, it's true. And everybody's saying, look at the, because if anybody goes back and checks the replay, you can actually see somewhat of a shadow, but it can be a little misleading because of the way the lights are in an arena. It's true. There were many variables. I know a lot of Arizona fans and some other fans across the league too are saying that Arizona got screwed and everybody should be basically heading towards Phoenix this week for the championship. I mean, a lot can be done to stop this in the future. And one of the things that both you and I agreed with, and I think you and I have said many, many a time, is that with today's technology, you don't necessarily need those little lipstick cams that are right on the goal line. You can still get something that has sort of like a look a little bit, not necessarily a 360 cam, but a 190 cam. So you know what I'm saying, Adam? But have something.
190. Good math, Tim.
Yeah, 180. Yeah, 180. Have something on the goal line. Basically, have something on the goal line. In order, because now this is the second time in playoff history, and we can. Recent playoff history, second time we can all where everybody goes back to the it was the Philadelphia and New York Dragons game.
Philadelphia and the Dragons. And remember that was I believe that was ruled down originally and they overturned it. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No,
I know there were a couple.
That was the first year too for playoff replay.
I know Philadelphia had 3 replays go their way in the Arena Bowl, all of which were complete and utter BS. But I think many AFL, we'll just call them historians, will tell you that something may have been up that day, in those days rather in Philadelphia. But we could sit here and bemoan this fact of this play and did they get it right or did they not get it right. You know, my gut is they didn't get it right, okay? But I have no problem with the way they ruled it after they got it wrong in the first place.
Right.
Excuse me. Human error is a part of sport.
It is.
It just is. But the real issue that I have with this game, here's what I would tell Arizona fan. You're up 21-14 halfway through the second quarter,
mm-hmm.
and you've got San Jose facing 4th-and-20 from your 21-yard line.
Yep.
Don't give up a touchdown. I would tell Arizona fan, with 42 seconds left in the first half, your team took a 35-28 lead, and your coach kicked deep and got burned when San Jose scored a touchdown with 4 seconds left in the half.
Right.
I'll also say this. Kick your extra points. If Zendejas makes the extra point at, after making it 54-48, Arizona isn't forced to go for two with 2:03 left in the game, and this is a 7-point game. This would have been a 70-70 game had that been the case. I also tell Arizona fan this. With 40 seconds left in the game and all three timeouts in his pocket with a 4-point lead, there was no reason for Kevin Guy not to onside kick. He made the exact same mistake twice. He got burned twice, and that's why Arizona's not playing in this game. It's not because the ref screwed over Arizona. Arizona screwed over Arizona, and San Jose, for my money, not by a lot, was the better team in that game, and they were the better team because of two facets. Number one, the kicking game. And, oh, by the way, you know, why is Kevin Guy trying a 53-yard field goal with a kicker who can't kick the ball that far at the end of the game? Throw it up,
man. It was really short. I mean, considering that you do have the net that you could use, and we all know, ball off the net, ball off the irons, anything.
Yeah, but nobody, go back and watch that. Not one lineman was on his horse down the field. Not one lineman took a run at that ball off of the net. I have a problem with that. That's bad coaching.
How about this? And I just thought about it since you're talking about that. How about trying a fake at that point? Because if you think about it,
it'd never work.
There would be only one person back.
You've got to get somebody out there first.
I know, but the thing is, they would only have one person back. It's something that I know it's a hell of a gamble, especially at that time of the game.
But you've only got big guys on the field, right?
Yeah, that's true. The jumbo group.
You know, okay, so you have one wide receiver. Well, who's getting down there for that one wide receiver?
Yeah.
But, you know, so you've got to execute a good long snap. The snapper has to have time with now two more blockers, two fewer blockers than rushers to stand up, throw the ball, and the guy has to catch the ball and get past the one guy. When, by the way, there are a lot of other faster guys on the field than the blockers who are going to be with them. Because you know there's going to be no blockers downfield. So that wouldn't work. But the bottom line is, even if you hit this field goal, you're only going to overtime. You clearly have a better chance to win the game. Kevin Guy got out coached. And he's whining about things. And I think he needs to look himself in the mirror. And Kevin Guy's had a phenomenal run. Okay? He's going to be in the Hall of Fame, if not this time around, real soon. He deserves it. On this day, he got out-coached by Darren Arbett's San Jose staff. And that is why San Jose is going to be readable.
What, besides being the out-coach, let's go back real quickly to what, you know, everybody's centering on the play at the end of the game compared to just what you pointed out. Can the league do something in the future with Commissioner Butera now being there and hopefully that the other owners are understanding, you know, the board of directors. Do you think the league will finally do something? We all know this, the technology. Who was it? Was it you or one of our other members talked about using a drone?
Yeah, that was me.
Also, there are, and people pointed out during the NBC NHL coverage, there's a goal camera up above. You know, some, not all have, but how hard is it to put a camera up there? You'll have that other option. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, I was glad to see San Jose get into the championship. It gives us a different shot of seeing a team in the championship rather than Arizona.
But we should stop and celebrate what Arizona's done.
Yeah, of course.
Five straight division titles, five straight appearances in the conference title game. Four straight Arena Bowl appearances up until this year. Three straight championships.
Mm-hmm.
They've won 85 games in the last five seasons.
Yeah.
Picture that. 85 games. They have played 21. They've now played at least 20 games in four consecutive seasons. Five consecutive seasons. That was 11 was the first year of 18 games. Five consecutive years, they have played at least 20 games. Unbelievable by Arizona. I don't want to sit here and say Arizona lost this game because San Jose won this game. Nothing.
Right. Right. No. No. I'll give. No. Exactly. No. No.
We're talking about minute details. Of what Arizona got wrong to why it didn't win this game. It does not take away, and all of a sudden, oh, this was a crappy team. This was a phenomenal
team. No.
The Arizona
Rattlers from now on will be spoken in the same voice, and a lot of people don't remember them, will be spoken in the same voice as the Detroit Drive. And we had a poll, I think, last year about it, talking about which team, you know, which of these, you know, championship teams who had phenomenal runs in the AFL are the best of them all. And anybody can argue, would I put Arizona on probably a better team as the Detroit Drive? I probably would, but it was a different era of football. Would be interesting to see if we could get these two teams together and to see how it would come out. I mean, but it's very simple.
By the way, yeah, Bills Carnage, we're not writing the Rattlers obituary yet. We just know we're not seeing them again this year.
By all means, whatsoever.
If they turn around and won the Arena Bowl next year.
Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, no way that we're.
They've still got the best young quarterback in the league.
Youngish
quarterback.
One game does not kill a momentum. Does not kill.
Especially
franchise.
One game decided the way this one was decided.
Right. This is exactly the
this
way.
Wasn't,
that
it, you know, this wasn't 75-20 or whatever the hell it was last year in the Arena Bowl with Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, it's very simple. Eric Meyer, 351 yards, 9 touchdowns. Mo Purify had 100 yards. Darius Reynolds had 100 yards. You know, Pertweet did what he had to do, even though he did miss one extra point. But, and Reggie Gray. Reggie Gray did exactly what he had to do. I mean, it's 2 touchdowns, did what he had to do on returning. That's why this team's going to the Arena Bowl. You know, it wasn't just one play. Combination of things. And I think a lot of people need to understand that that's basically what it was. Adam, do you want to – should we play the interview now for the guys or should we
– Yeah, whatever. Sure.
Okay. So as everybody knows, every year Arena Fan does do our best to get you all that we can to do with Arena Bowl. And so Adam did an interview today, and we're going to give you a short teaser on the coverage that we're going to be doing this week. And just today, Adam had a short interview with one of the guys that we're going to be talking about in a couple of minutes. His team is also joining the San Jose Sabercats at Arena Bowl in Stockton. Let's listen to a short interview with Tommy Grady.
And our coverage of Arena Bowl 28 continues right now with the quarterback of the Jacksonville Sharks, Tommy Grady. Tommy, thanks for taking some time out for us today.
Hey, no problem.
Well, I'll start right at the very beginning, Tommy. This is going to be your first Arena Bowl experience. Take us through what the last 24 hours was like in that game in Philadelphia and what it meant to be able to win that game up there on Sunday.
It was a tough road game. You know, anytime you play Philadelphia, they're going to have a good team, and they're well coached, and they always have good players. So we knew we had to score some points, and you know, we came through, and you know, we played a good game and played well enough to win. And I think we should keep that going on.
The game you played in Orlando 2 weeks ago, the offense seemed to do a little bit more kind of dinking and dunking the ball down the field, whereas yesterday in Philly, there were a lot more shots taken down the field. What did you see, or what did the offense see that caused them to make that sort of adjustment between those two games?
We kind of do our game plan on how other teams are playing, and you know, when we played Orlando, they were playing really soft, and they're pretty much taking away our deep pass, so we had to go kind of slowly down the field and then just score in the red zone. But you know, Philadelphia played differently. They played close up tight against us and pressed our stationary guys, so we had to kind of go down the field a little bit on them. And you know, our completion percentage goes down there, but there's more big plays. So I mean, it depends on kind of how the defenses are playing us, and we just try to take what they give us.
Now, the constant that you've had over the course of these two games in the playoffs, and really all year for that matter, is Joe Hills. Specifically in the playoffs, 9 touchdowns, 8 of which have come in the red zone. What's it like to have a target like that to be able to throw the ball to when you're down inside the 10-yard line?
That was great. I mean, Joe's a monster all over the field, but you know, once he gets in the red zone, he seems to have a knack nice to get open and find space and makes my job a lot easier. But he's a big target. He goes up and gets it, and I got a lot of confidence in Joe.
One of the emerging stars, maybe not necessarily for Jacksonville, he's a guy who's been there for a while, is London Crawford, who's had two really big games, maybe not the touchdowns, but seems to be the guy you've been going to a lot in the middle of the field. What was it like bringing him back into this offense and kind of completing your set of wide receivers along with Joe Hills and Tiger Jones?
Yeah, I mean, Joe and Tiger get a lot of attention because they've been in this league a long time, and I think the defenses know that, and they try to stop those two guys as much as they can. But London's I think he's leading our team in receiving in the playoffs right now. The big thing is he's filling the role that the team needs him to fill, and he's doing a great job. He's great with the ball. Great with the ball after he catches it, and he makes plays, and he does everything the team needs to win. He's great. He's great on special teams. He's great on everything. But he's come along and receiver with us, and he's doing a good job.
The Sharks obviously had to play on Sunday night, flew home this morning to get back to Jacksonville. We're not so sure when you're going to fly out to the West Coast. Are you worried about the short week playing in Stockton, and how is the preparation maybe a little different for this game than it is for a normal game?
I think we're going to do a lot more mental stuff this week. We got a lot of guys that are banged up a little bit, and trying to get healthy and rest our bodies because we got a really good San Jose team playing next Saturday. So we're going to try to, get our mental practice going and play some walkthroughs. But, the main thing is staying healthy and being ready to go next Saturday.
I know you probably haven't seen a lot of tape yet this week on San Jose, but you did see this team earlier in the season, week four, 68-48 defeat. What are your first thoughts about this matchup with the Sabercats?
Oh, man, San Jose, they're always a good team, especially this year. They're well coached. They got a lot of the best players in the league there. They had a good quarterback, good defense, maybe the best defense ever in arena football. Statistically, they've been great all year. It's a big matchup for us. We're gonna have to be focused and take what they give us and try to score some points against them.
What's one thing this offense has to do to be able to score more points on San Jose than they did in week four?
I think it's we're both totally different teams than we were week four. I think we've improved and they've improved. So I'm aware to watch film this week and try to see what their weaknesses are and try to exploit that as much as possible.
Tommy, after all these years you've been playing this game of arena football, specifically here in the AFL, going through Oklahoma City and Utah and Pittsburgh and now Jacksonville, what would it mean to you to finally be able to get your hands on a Foster Trophy?
Oh, man, it'd be awesome. That's why you play for us. That's what the passion for the game is, to win championships. And people's legacy are made off of championships. So I think winning a championship would be big for me, but for our team. We got a team full of hungry guys that want to win this championship, and I think we're ready for the challenge.
He is the quarterback of the Jacksonville Sharks, and we'll be seeing him Saturday afternoon in Stockton for the Arena Bowl against San Jose Sabercats. He is Tommy Grady. Tommy, thanks a lot, and we'll see you out in California in a few days.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
He, he's already in playoff mode. He's in Arena Bowl mode, more or less. Saying everything that he has to say, right?
And absolutely nothing else aside from what he has to say. No. Grady's got a good head on his shoulders.
Yeah.
He sounds like a guy who is ready to go compete for a championship.
Yeah.
It's tough to argue with that.
Yep. And obviously the reason why we're playing the Grady interview is because in the other conference championship, Jacksonville was able to knock off Philadelphia in another instant classic. In the Arena Football League by a 61-56 score. Of everything that stood out, okay, besides the issues at the end of the game, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, is that they were able to do, Jacksonville was able to do this with hardly any, despite, Derek Ross's penalties, but Derek Ross, nothing. The guy who basically has all Arena Football League records for rushing, he did absolutely nothing.
Well, he did some stuff all right. He first fell out of his team.
What?
He hurt his team.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant, besides the penalties there. But, you know, it was all Grady and his wide receivers. Three wide receivers, by the way. That's it. Three. Crawford, Hills, and Jones. Very even between them in yards, but, you know, when you have an 11-yard average with Joe Hills, 5 for 55 and 5 touchdowns.
That's all you need from Joe Hills, though.
Numbers were, yeah, the numbers were wild. I mean, if the game was being played in Vegas, it would have been even better, right? But,
No, I mean, Joe Hills was used perfectly in this game, just as he was used perfectly in Orlando.
Yeah.
You don't – where Joe Hills is valuable is not, you know, between the 5 and the 5.
Right.
He's he or the 10 and the 10, whatever. He's valuable from the 10 to the goal line. That's where – or any time, basically anywhere on the field you want to throw a jump ball towards the end zone, that is where Joe Hills is worthwhile. He has 9 touchdowns now in these 2 postseason games. 8 of them have come from inside the 10-yard line. Think about that. Tommy Grady has 8 touchdown passes from inside the 10-yard line. I will bet you there are quarterbacks this year that – or excuse me, wide receivers this year that didn't have – like good wide receivers who didn't have 8 touchdowns from inside the 5-yard line for their
right.
team all season. And Joe Hills has done it in 2 games because he's that good. And I give Jacksonville all the credit in the world for getting away from that running game. They didn't need it, and the truth of the matter is, you know, Coach Moss will never say it. I'll bet he wish he had a different fullback. Derek Ross is not blocking well. He's committing too many holding penalties. The running game is proving to be useless when you've got an offense that's as dangerous as the one that Jacksonville has. They've
right.
got the best wide receiving core in the league, and that includes San Jose. And they're finally using it properly. It took them 20 weeks to figure out how to use this crew properly. But London Crawford makes a big, big difference because he's just that gritty, short-handed guy who you could always go get on, you know, third and long or something
right.
like that to go be in the right spot. Look, he recovered 2 onside kicks. They weren't the greatest onside kicks in the world, but short hands, you know, does everything Jacksonville needs. Doesn't need to score touchdowns, keeps his mouth shut. He's a really team-first guy. You know, I've been around him long enough to know that. It works now for Jacksonville. And Coach Moss has put together – look, for a guy who I thought should have been fired in week 4, and certainly if not in week 4, then after week 6 or
yeah.
7, whatever
yeah.
it was when he dropped to 1-5 and got embarrassed by Tampa Bay. I thought he should have been fired at that point. Still think he's one of the greatest coaches in this league. I just didn't think it was working for him with this team. He has found a way to make it work, and he has the most dangerous team in the Arena Football League right now.
Now, let's talk about the last minute, basically, where it seemed like Jacksonville was going to kind of completely collapse and give this game to the Philadelphia Soul. You know, the games, they had the ball under a minute, was within the, it was like first and goal from the, was it the 10, if I'm not mistaken, something like that?
Oh, you know about the end of the game?
Yeah, the end of the game, yeah.
Yeah. Jacksonville has the ball first and goal at the – no, it was outside the 10.
Was outside the 10?
They could have gotten the first down. I think it was like at the 15. They could have gotten the first down, and instead of either A – they could have done a lot of things here. They could have run the ball on first down
right.
late, Philadelphia start burning timeouts.
Right, which they had 3 at the time, so it's –
right. So, I mean, yes, they weren't going to be able to run them out of clock, but they could have at least run them out of timeouts.
Right.
Secondly, they could have tried to – and it would have been a stretch – but they could have tried to drop back with Grady and let him throw the ball 15 rows up.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. That wouldn't have killed the clock either, but at least
no.
that certainly brought it down. You know, 3 of those in a field goal attempt, could have at least come close to killing the clock. I think the last thing you try to do there is score a touchdown, but that's what Jacksonville did. It bit him in the backside because, field goal attempt – at the end was originally ruled no good, then it was ruled good, then it was reviewed, then
yes.
it was no good again.
Yeah.
And
what was your – from what you saw, what was your thought? Because I know this is the other big
– okay.
It's not really as big of a controversy as it was.
Oh, I think – yeah, it's not as big of a controversy because it didn't end up making a difference. Had Jacksonville – I'll tell you this. For as bad as Arizona fan thinks that they got screwed,
uh-huh.
this would have been preposterous. How on earth do you tell me that there is conclusive video evidence that ball was wide? Because I will remind you, it's this. I it's the same rule as in the NFL.
Yeah.
If the ball goes over the bar and any part of that ball would have touched any part of that bar when it went over, the kick is good. I think it definitively did that. I can't imagine that that entire ball was outside of that entire upright when it crossed.
I actually am going the opposite direction, because when I saw it multiple times, I thought, okay, at first it looked good, but then I saw the replay again, and just – and mind you, yes, I don't think the camera angle that they had on the floor was a – was completely centered to where the kicker and
forget
the,
centered. How do you tell when the ball went over the bar?
No, I know. But for me, it's to me at one point it ended up looking like it was farther, you know, farther to the right than what it would have been. And to me, it, I didn't think it was any good. Now this brings my brings us to another point too. You know, we talked about, you know, goal line cams for the other game. Didn't at one point, whether it be, I think it was NBC or TNN, didn't there used to be a camera that was that was directly on the goalpost that was able to, you know, swivel up and down, get a camera angle?
Hello, technology.
Yeah, I know. It was there. Even if you had the goal line camera for hockey up there, same thing. I mean, the exact same thing. You would have had a fantastic angle.
It would have been tough. But the bottom line is I think the referees just interpreted this rule incorrectly.
Now.
And that would have been so much, in my eyes, so much a bigger travesty than what we saw with Arizona.
What can the league do to make things better? Now, I know there are different things that can be done. You can easily put it's something that it, not like a spring, but I think you understand what I'm getting at. Something that goes right at the end of the goal post itself that sticks up just a touch more. Where if something happens to hit it, it will knock into it. Or can the league do anything? Or is it just a matter of technology?
You've got two refs, and this is what really drove me nuts about this.
Yeah, where were they?
You have two refs who their only job on a field goal is to look up and see where the ball crosses the goal, you know, the uprights, and determine where
they're. Yeah, they should be positioned there. I agree.
And the ref and the ref who ruled it good was the one who was underneath the bar. He was the only guy with a really good view of that.
Are there two of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
He had a fantastic view. He made a ruling on it. I again.
Yeah, because at first they called it no good, and then I think they had a conversation, then they called it good, right?
And good was the right call. And I have no doubt that good was the right call. Because if any part of that ball goes over any part of that upright,
right,
it's good. I think it's a stupid rule. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a stupid rule. I think it's a stupid rule in the NFL, too. Because clearly, if that bar extended to infinity, it would have clanged off the bar and come off.
Right, right.
But that's the rule. It would have been a bigger travesty had Jacksonville lost. But again, all the credit in the world to Jacksonville. And had Jacksonville lost this game, we would be ripping the hell out of Coach Moss for the way he handled the last 40 seconds or so.
Yeah, I was ready. Yeah, yeah. I mean, everything was – they had everything going against them all year. All year. And this – you know, this has been, I've said this multitude, I'm sure we could have a drinking game with it, calling him Jekyll and Hyde, the way that these Jacksonville Sharks have been playing. They're able to come over adversity. You know, Tommy Greedy's finally getting to the championship game after having a horrible, horrible postseason career. He's finally able to get that point and try to get the Foster Trophy. It's, now, what about Philadelphia? What do they take away from this?
They take away the exact same thing Arizona should take away from it. We got beat on this day by a really, really good team. And if Philadelphia came back with the exact same squad next year, they'd be back in the exact same position. I think Philadelphia just needs to go back, you know, chalk it up. It was a 15-3 season. It was a great season. You know what? Jacksonville had their number. Jacksonville beat them the last three times they played them.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean Jacksonville was a substantially – I do think Jacksonville was a better team. Even though Jacksonville went 10-8, I get it. I've consistently said Jacksonville's got the best team in that conference. And, boy, we could have played back the tape from the beginning of the year when I had Arizona playing Jacksonville in the Arena Bowl.
Yeah.
Could have played that back. I was close.
You were close. Very close. I think you're
a
lot closer than I was. So.
Yeah, I think Philadelphia just takes away from this. We had a great season. You know, we played together as a team. They'll always say that. Everything you always hear about Philadelphia is we did it together as a team. no eyes in the locker room or anything like that. You know, they played it together. They played it their way, and they got beat by a really good team. They made a couple mistakes in the first half, and they just never got them back. And, you know, ultimately, Dan Rodabaugh threw a couple picks. And, you know, again, is the last one his fault? No, he's got to throw the ball up there, you know, for grabs. But Jacksonville made enough plays to win. Philadelphia didn't. And sometimes you're going to get beat like that in the AFL. It's going to happen sometimes.
Also, Jacksonville was able to do with without Joe Sykes. Complete without Joe Sykes, as we found
out.
Joe Sykes,
yeah. Broken leg.
Yeah.
Dumped the season.
Gone.
So, I mean, Jacksonville, without arguably its best player, has won two playoff games on the road. It's not often that you see teams win two road games in the playoffs. And now Jacksonville's going to have to win a third if they want to ultimately get to the Arena Bowl.
And Bill Carnage gave us a quick rules verification, by the way, about what the NFL rule is for the entire ball must pass through the vertical plane of the goal, which is the area above the crossbar and between the uprights, or if above the uprights, between their outside edges.
Which means if any point of the ball, or excuse me, I guess it's the entirety of the ball.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So the entirety of the ball must be inside the outside of the upright.
Yeah.
So maybe, okay, maybe I interpreted that wrong. If whatever rule it is in the NFL, it's the same rule in the AFL. Well, let me rephrase that. You know what? I can't say that. I can say I've asked the question and I know that's how it's supposed to be interpreted.
Okay.
Because it's not written that way in the AFL rulebook.
Now, going forward, as if you
and Bill's Carnage, I completely agree. It should have been good. Completely agree.
I still disagree.
Well, you're wrong. You're Canadian. They don't have what's the rule in Canada? You know what the rule is in Canada?
I'd have to look it up. Hell, remember, if it goes wide, you get a point for it.
Well, if not, if they take it out.
Not unless they take it out. Remember, with us doing the pre-Arena Bowl show here tonight, do not forget that Arena Fan will be on the ground and in person in Stockton. What they Spokane again? Stockton for the Arena Bowl. Most of us will be on the ground by Thursday night, ready and raring to go with Media Day on Friday. Again,
I think we could say this, right?
Go ahead.
Say what time this is?
I
don't care whether they want us to say it or not.
Okay.
It's going to be 4 p.m. Eastern on Friday, Media Day. I don't know what type of coverage we're going to have. Hopefully the answer is the live variety.
Yep.
But obviously we're going to kind of be at the mercy of, A, what the league lets us do, and, B, what the Wi-Fi situation is there.
Right. But
wherever it is. I just know it's – oh, that's Spokane Arena. Damn it, now I did it. Oh, well, yeah, we already know the Wi-Fi situation sucks there, so we may not be the live variety, but we'll see. Yeah,
we're gonna try our best. If you haven't already, we're going to be doing a lot of our live streaming stuff at Arena Bowl on Periscope. If you haven't followed us already, please go ahead and do so. It is Arena Fan, and we're going to try to get as much stuff out there. And obviously the reason why we're doing it this time around instead of on Meerkat is because, as I mentioned last week, they have a way that you can watch stuff. I think it's an archive for the last either 12 to 15 to 20 hours or whatever it is, where you will be able to go back and watch if you happen to miss anything, any of the action or any of the live broadcasts that we have done while we are there. So we're ready and raring to go. We're ready and raring. Spokton. There. That's it. Spokton. We're going to Spokton.
Stockan.
Let's, you know what, Adam, let's quickly, we'll talk about a few things that occurred just in the past couple days, and then we will get to the matchup.
We're going to talk about the matchup over the week.
Yeah.
We're talk about the matchup now.
Well, I wanted to ask you real quick, what do you think, somebody asked the question, that's why I'm asking, what do you think about Dick Vermeil buying into the soul?
Great, whatever. Next.
Don't care.
Doesn't mean a damn thing.
My only thought was, I know it's only a 2.5% stake in the team itself. My first thought actually was maybe he's trying to get in because if he's going to get into the Soul Group, he's in with Marty Judge, and he could possibly...
China, yep.
Exactly, China. That's exactly what I was thinking. We will go over them more in detail, but there were to awards that were given out today. Reggie Gray got the Receiver of the Year award. And what was the other one? Do you remember off the top of your head? I don't have it.
Oh, Jeremy Kelm won defensive back.
Yep, there we go. Jeremy Kelm won defensive back. And obviously the rest of them are going to be released throughout the week. And I guess they'll leave the big stuff. Like, I don't know what they're going to do when it comes to an awards ceremony, if there's going to be one. But we'll find out.
I know if it's Thursday, I won't be there.
It won't be. I don't think it will be. But I think it's very possible it's going to be the same as it was last year. And it will be at the arena. Would not be surprised. Would not be surprised. Also, don't forget to head over to our yearly Arena Bowl blog. It's the only time that we can actually say this.
To be formed tonight at some point.
And placed on over at our message boards at arenafan.com. Also, do not forget to follow us on multitudes of social media, Facebook, Instagram, Meerkat, Periscope, SoundCloud for all of our archives. Did I forget any? Facebook.
Hey, follow me on Twitter this week. I'm going to be ballpark hopping.
That's right. That's right.
Ballpark hopping tomorrow night.
And let us know.
I will be at the Cell in Chicago.
Yeah, let us know. And also let us know if you're going to be at the game. And hopefully we can meet up with you before the game. Okay, big game itself. And you know what? It's funny. I'm looking at the front page here, Adam. And this is the best way to start this off. Don't mean a thing if you ain't got the ring. You have two quarterbacks who have not won a title in the AFL. You have one, as I mentioned before, who's had the worst playoff history, finally being able to get over that hump. Being played at a neutral home game, a site game, alternate home. I don't know what to call it now.
I like neutral-ish. I think that's what we should
neutral home. Neutral home. That was a debacle in itself, which I'm going to make a comment about. Either way, you have San Jose, which is trying to become the best, had the best team in league history record-wise. They're going to try to get their 20th win. Am I right here? 20th win. No team has ever done that in league history in a single season.
I don't know if there's ever been. I don't even know if there's been an indoor team. I don't know if there's any team ever try to win 20 ever win 20 games.
Alphabet leagues, I don't think play as many games, so I would say no.
Because there's no CFL team that's ever done it, right? There's no CFL team that's ever won 17 games, right? I believe 14-1-1 is the best.
We play 18.
Yeah, I know you do, but you'd have to win 17. I don't think anybody's ever gone 17-1.
Oh, you're right. 18. It would have to be 17. The closest teams that I could think of, with all honesty, there has been an undefeated team in CFL history, but it was
1940 something, and they played 14 games. I've already looked it up. That was Calgary.
I think it would be I think it's the Baltimore Stallions. I think the Baltimore Stallions was one of the teams in league history that set that are very, very close. Them and Calgary, I think it was 18 wins. I think it was 18.
Yeah, 18, 8, 20.
No.
20
no.
is a whole hell of a lot.
Yes, it is. San Jose and Jacksonville. What more can we say? I mean, there's Jacksonville itself is the first team, and I know you added this one in. Jacksonville is the first team to go 0-3 and 0-4 to start the season and made it to the championship game. There was this one thing that you came out, and maybe our friends can help us either on the podcast when you're hearing this over on SoundCloud or here on Meerkat. You mentioned one specifically about, was it Mo Purify? And we weren't able to confirm this yet, were we? We're not sure.
I'm as certain as anybody. Nobody's going to be able to prove me wrong. Let's put it that way. That if Mo P wins this game, if San Jose wins this game, Purify, we believe, will become the first player in league history to win four consecutive championships. Now, we know he didn't play last year in the Arena Bowl, but he did get a ring and was on the team. But he'd become the first player in AFL history to win four straight Arena Bowls.
Would he be also the one player that has the most rings?
No. He's still only got four. Omar's got five.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, you'd have to go
looking it up.
You'd have to go back and check the Detroit Drive streak, but then again, they only won four straight. Or three.
Nope. Right.
So, any old time, let us know. Let us know.
The only way is if there's someone who didn't play in those Arena Bowls, you know, who was on the roster. That's the only way. Unless our box scores are just totally wrong, and I can't imagine that.
But what do we have to look forward to, Adam? I mean, it's – I'm trying to – I didn't bring it up here. Hold on a second. History between these two teams, because obviously we haven't
Jacksonville got beat by 22 when these teams played earlier in the year. 20 when they played earlier in the
20?
Year.
20, okay. There we go.
And Bills Carnage, by the way, no, the closest is actually Cleveland last year, which got the 19-1.
Yes. Is it possible that these teams have only played each other three times?
Yeah. Jacksonville's only been around 5 years. 6 years.
Wow. And Jacksonville's 0-for. They're going into 0-for-3. Coincidence?
Really?
Seriously? Oh, they're 0-3.
Okay. Great.
But this will be the second game in played in San Jose. San Jose home game.
San Jose-ish.
Yeah.
San Jose East.
Yeah. Since 2011. I will admit to seeing what the setup was over the weekend. The Fries went all out. This game looked, even though the place only holds maximum 9,800 for arena football, according to Wikipedia, this place looked like the SAP Center from field to, you know, to the dasher boards, to the things behind they even brought the banners, Adam.
And they brought the mascot, who they showed on TV one
time. Brought the mascot. I mean, I know we'll be making our official Arena Bowl picks in what we usually do every year in our column, which will be, I think, published probably Friday or Saturday.
Friday night, probably.
Yep.
Maybe Saturday morning. We'll see.
What do we have to look forward to in this game? Is this, like, you know, Massey is saying that this game's over. They're predicting over 10 points. I think it was over 10 points, right?
Spread's 10.5. Massey said 14 or 14.5.
Okay. Sorry, Kitty Girl 45. It's I know if we're out of sync, it's not us. It's Meerkat. I apologize. What do we have to look forward to? I mean, it's... Is this going to be a team that's going to become history in the Arena Football League? I mean, the history, best team ever, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Does Jacksonville have a shot in this game?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Now, here's the thing. You know what you're getting out of San Jose. You're getting the best team in the league. Okay? What you don't know what you're getting is what you're getting out of Jacksonville.
Yes.
Because you get the Jacksonville that we've seen recently. That Jacksonville team can beat anybody in the history of this game. That Jacksonville team is really, 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 really good.
Just for fun. Let's ask them 8-ball. What should we ask them? Will we ask if Jacksonville's going to be Jekyll or Hyde? What should we ask him?
Whatever. You know, I think the 8-ball's stupid.
Oh, come on.
Can you even get the 8-ball onto an airplane since it's got liquid in it?
Maybe if it was in its original box. I don't know. This, it could be, yeah, I agree. I think for me it is which Jacksonville team's going to show up. You know, Jekyll and Hyde Jacksonville's been that way all year. This could be a very interesting game. Could easily come down to the return game.
And it could easily be a 30-point game.
Yeah, which I really don't want to happen again this year.
The last time we had a good Arena Bowl. In fact, we've only had one good Arena Bowl since 2008.
Jacksonville, Arizona.
And Jacksonville happened to be in it, and it happened to be played on the left coast.
Good point. Very good point. I don't know what Jacksonville's record is on the left coast. I'd have to check.
I know they've got at least one win.
Yep. I mean, it's so hard to – you look at this matchup. This isn't – this isn't really like last year where you saw the dominance. It's a something about this Jacksonville team that just, you know,
they're really good.
Something different, and it's something.
But they could also be really, really bad.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I'm just trying to think about it. It just really interesting. I mean, hopefully there won't be any issues. I'm sure we'll get the same old. I respect this team. When it comes to,
you're gonna get two teams who handle it professionally, workmanlike.
Very much so. Yeah.
Except for Derek Ross, who's gonna be Derek Ross. Tiger Jones will probably have a lot of fun because he's Tiger Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else will be businesslike, workmanlike. Darren Arbett will say nothing in his 5 minutes of talking. And Les Moss will tell you the truth, but he really won't tell you a whole hell of a lot either.
Right.
It's not going to be a good day for interviews. Let's put it that way.
No. Well, hey, I would hope. I don't think it's going to happen, but it would be nice. We saw how Coach Moss broke down when they won the conference championship yesterday. Do you think? Unfortunately, I don't think Coach Moss is going to be able to be on the field again.
Of course not. No way.
Due to his condition, so I don't know. I don't know where else to go with this because it's, don't want to give away our picks, but it's just a matter of, how about this? Who has the better advantage when it comes to, first of all, quarterback?
Bipolar, not fair. When he's good, Tommy Grady. When he's not good, Urbach Meyer.
But if you're just to choose, would you just call it a draw at the moment?
These playoffs?
Yeah.
Tommy Grady? Zero doubt.
Okay. Wide receiving core?
Jacksonville.
Okay. For obvious reasons, obviously. Joe Hill does have 55 straight touchdowns, Kicking game.
Tough one. I'll give it to San Jose.
I would give it to San Jose, too. I would give it to San Jose also. Defensive line.
Now San Jose.
Okay.
Before the Joe Sykes injury, may have had a different discussion, probably still would have gone San Jose.
Right.
But now it's San Jose by a lot.
Okay. Return game.
Incomplete. The only reason I say that is Michael Lindsay is a damn good kick returner.
Yeah.
We just haven't seen it yet.
No. I give it up. For me, I would give a slight edge to San Jose. Offensive line.
Jacksonville.
Head coach.
Tough one.
That is a tough one.
Are we going to say head coach or are we going to say coaching staff?
Let's be fair. Okay, I'll go coaching staff then. I'll take your
head coach is definitely Jacksonville. Coaching staff, man, there's a lot of championships on that San Jose side.
You would actually go. For me, coaching staff.
Between Arbett, Jernigan, and Smith, what do you have? 20 arena bowls there between those guys?
Yeah.
That's a lot of arena bowls.
Yeah, I would go San Jose for coaching staff. Did I leave anything out? Any intangibles that I left out? Oh, I'll throw this in. I might as well go ahead and throw this in. It's a stupid question.
Then the answer is probably San Jose.
Yeah. I was going to say, who's going to be hurt most by the quote-unquote neutral site game?
Doesn't matter.
No?
You know what else doesn't matter? The fact that Jacksonville played on Sunday instead of Saturday and had to travel an extra day. I'm sorry. After we saw Jacksonville with three fewer days of preparation go out to the West Coast
and
beat Arizona, I don't believe in any of that crap anymore. It's either you're playing well this time of year or you're not playing well this time of year. Doesn't matter.
No,
doesn't matter one leg.
That's true. All right, guys. Stay tuned for anything further for the arena for the Arena Bowl. Anything from Arena Fan, we hope to bring you as good coverage as we normally do every year. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be seeing you once again at the Arena Bowl, Adam.
Thursday.
Yep.
Of course, I'll be spending a day in Chicago and a day at Cincinnati first. But
okay. So everybody, if you're going, have a safe trip. We'll see you at Arena Bowl. So for everybody here at AFL tonight, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.